Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers.
We share knowledge regarding Sequest.
Down, down, down.
Recording on November 10th.
It's a very important maritime.
The 49th anniversary of the aforementioned sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Is this your Bob Fack last time? No, two episodes ago.
I talked about...
I think it was for the ghost episode. I think it was for Night in the Shadows. Yes, two shipwrecks. Episodes ago.
Shipwrecks, yeah, that makes sense.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
That's not how I want to start this one.
No?
I want to start by talking about toys.
Toys.
Yes!
Okay, we can talk about toys.
So, Sequest DSV, as mentioned, launched with this huge multimedia, multi-SKU push, including, of course, merchandising.
I have none of the action figures, and I'm forever going to be upset about this. So, like, if anyone out there, like, wants to pass one along.
Mm-hmm. Any of you eBay heads out there.
Just let me know.
So, toy company Playmates. Lucas, put the magazine down. No. Toy company Playmates put out a 9-figure line of Sequest DSV toys, and the facial sculpts are so good and so detailed, and the actor likenesses are incredible. Look at Crocker and Bridger here.
Dang, those are pretty good. I wouldn't say they look exactly like them, but those are pretty good for action figures.
Right?
I can see what they're going for.
I'm looking at an article and pictures at sequestvault.com, fantastic resource.
It's so good. So good. The only other person in the world that I was like, you get me. You get me in this regard.
I love this comparison from the New York Toy Fair showing off prototypes of, here's Captain Bridger right in front of a prototype of Captain Picard from their TNG line.
Bridger has so many more like details in his uniform.
Exactly. They went so much farther. Look how many more points of articulation the Sequest figures all had. People believed in these toys in the industry. They were going to fly off the shelves. It's going to be fantastic. They didn't.
No. Children watch the show.
That is a big part of it. Some of the other reasons people have to blame for this line not doing the gangbusters that people had hopes for: it was 9 figures.
Mm-hmm.
They only had 2 villains, which is why I'm talking about them on this episode.
Because one of them is...
Because we're meeting the last member of the action figure line today.
Who's the other villain?
Dr. Z from Games.
Oh, interesting choice there.
Yes, Dr. Zeller. So what this means is you have 5 people in identical clothes, only different from really the neck up, right?
Except for like the Lucas one, and he's in something he's never worn in the show.
Lucas is the only hero not in a UEO uniform. He's in a short wetsuit. Yes.
He never wears a short wetsuit.
He got the leggy out and a jean jacket over his wetsuit.
He never fucking wears that.
And a Darwin figure to round out, yes, Crocker, Ford, Bridger, Westphalen, and O'Neill.
Krieg doesn't get one? What the fuck?
Krieg doesn't get one. Darwin's in there. There are plenty of vehicles. The Sequest, of course, one of the launches, which looks so cool.
Yeah, I want those vehicles so bad, too.
The evil sub from the premiere and another smaller hero craft that... we'll be talking about in 4 episodes. I forget the episode number.
Yeah, though it's already in a bit. It's gotten name dropped earlier in the season. I was like, what the fuck? How does that name already exist?
That's true. other than the floundering ratings that the show had, the big reason people in the industry point to for the Sequest action figure line not taking off is... they're all dressed boring, like there's not enough variety and not enough villains.
Why is Lucas dressed like that? That's what really kills me. Like, why is he dressed like that? That's so bad.
You know how many places make a plastic dolphin? We love Darwin. Obviously, we love Darwin.
You gotta sell the plastic dolphin with it. If you're gonna have a show... with a dolphin, you gotta have the plastic dolphin.
I can go to
Why
Michael's.
Why is Lucas not in that wetsuit in this promo shot?
The one he actually wears.
The one he actually wears all the time through the seasons. Why is he in, like, that fucking thing that he never wears?
You gotta get that teen heartthrob shin. That's how you're gonna move some figures. I don't know. I don't.
So bad.
No. So... that is how I wanted to talk, kick off our 10th episode.
Yeah.
Wherein we will talk about season 1, episode 10, The Regulator.
Yes, we are.
I do have to correct myself. I misspoke and last week introduced Bad Water as episode 10. No, it's 9. Oh,
no, yeah.
I didn't want to, like, ADR and just splice in. No.
9.
I let it slip. This is episode 10, The Regulator, written by executive producer David J. Burke, who also previously wrote The Devil's Window, and directed by Les Sheldon, who previously directed Treasures of the Tonga Trench.
This makes so much sense.
It does.
It makes so much sense. Absolutely.
This episode really falls together when, like, you realize they brought the comedy director on this one. And I don't know why. Because if I was reading the like, 60 pages that they shot for it, I wouldn't think, oh, yeah, bring the comedy director.
But
they did.
They did.
They fucking did.
And I don't mind.
So this episode begins south of Madagascar, not in a trench.
Not in a trench. There's not a trench.
Trench-free is the way to be.
Trench-free.
They're on a plateau, actually.
You know what we got? We got everyone sweaty. They're so fucking sweaty.
Fucking sweaty.
They're glistening. They're sparkling.
Ford and Westphalen and anonymous crew.
Not Westphalen. Hitchcock. That'd be really weird if it was Westphalen in her little tiny tank top, just sweating away, trying to pry this, like, pipe off the ceiling. No, no, no.
No.
It's Hitchcock. It's Ford, the young one.
Hitchcock and anonymous crew number 3.
They're in one of the hallways of the ship. It is 102 degrees. Mm-hmm. They are trying to get open this pipe that will get to an air conditioning chip.
Yes.
That is broken.
And Hitchcock is complaining, oh, who designed this thing? And the captain walks in and says, I did, with his zipped up turtleneck in 102 degrees.
He has no glistening amount of sweat on him. So really what this shows us is that there is a doorway he just came through that's really good at dividing the sections, and the heat is not spilling over.
I think he's just not human. He's some sort of robot.
Yeah.
We talked about in Bad Water almost the entire rest of the cast having this little moment of their personality quirk. And for Bridger, it is that when it's time for action, when he's on the bridge captaining, you know, before one of his friends like Crocker pulls him aside, he is ice cold. He's absolutely inflappable, a solid block of steel in that episode. And that carries forward. He's surgically removed his sweat glands.
Yes.
So that he can cut this figure in front of his repair workers.
Oh, but he's sassy. He's a sassy man. He's all like, oh, I planned for this to be the sauna originally. Straight face. And they're like, I don't know whether to laugh or not at this, sir. So the problem, once they get it down, is very much just this little tiny chip.
Yes.
And Bridger's like, this is a 50-cent part. We do not have this. What? And they're like, no, this has been, like, back-ordered for, like, months. We're kind of screwed. We do not have this. So they're going to have to make all of the crew, the 30 people who, like, sleep in that section, double bunk with others in other sections because they can't sleep there. It's too hot. They're going to die.
So there is this marching scene of a bunch of, like, jumpsuited, zipped-up, uniform non-coms.
Yeah.
With their camping bedrolls.
Yes. And their duffel bag.
Coming off the maglev, marching two by two like Madeline, as Crocker assigns them new roommates.
Well, and what I love is because they all, like, file off the maglev. And Crocker's like, hold on, you're all being too crazy and willy-nilly. Everyone get in line. Like, we're gonna do this right. And makes them walk like Madeline. Like, it's not like they did that originally. He's like, no, we're gonna have order. And so he leads them on, drops a couple to O'Neill, and then goes across the hall to Krieg. And I love the fact that O'Neill and Krieg apparently are across from each other.
Yeah.
O'Neill must fucking hate this.
He gets interrupted while he's brushing his teeth. That's nice. But Krieg Krieg can't have roommates. His quarters are a biohazard.
He's like, I got, you know, I'm the supply and morale officer. I got supplies. It's not safe for others to be around, like, the supplies. Like, I'm responsible for everything that's within this room. And Crocker's like, oh, you're concerned about it being safe? Okay, let me bring forward my two very large men who are part of my security team. Your stuff has never been safer, Krieg. Enjoy.
These massive muscle mountain men.
One who is named Mars. I don't know what the other one's name is, but Mars is fucking gigantic.
Over his shoulder and behind him, we get another look into Krieg's quarters. And why does he have long-tail kites and streamers hanging from his ceiling?
I love that every time we see Krieg's room, it is different.
There is he's something... moving a lot of equipment. He's got skews to move. You know what he's got? The unreleased Wave 2 of the Playmates action figure line.
Yeah. When Lucas gets pants.
When we finally get a Westphalen.
We get a Westphalen. But we get a Krieg.
We get a Mars, and he's just a repainted He-Man figure.
Yeah, we get an Ortiz. Oh, see, no, they gotta wait for season 2 when Ortiz has muscles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No new villains, though.
No.
Sequest is not a show with a lot of villains.
We don't have a lot of villains.
Like, there will be more as the season goes on, and certainly in seasons 2 and 3 as well. But the villains per episode number is not high.
Well, no, that's what happens when you're dealing with a lot of, like, natural disasters and...
Earthquakes
and toxic, you know, LG, whatnot.
They could have made Submarine Lady from the first episode.
No one likes her.
Exactly.
Yeah, we can't have her. No, thank you. Really makes sense why they made today's dude, though.
Mm-hmm.
Once we meet him,
He's a character.
Love him.
So is Dr. Z from Games, frankly.
You know what they should have made?
Ponytail guy from the premiere.
I was going to say they should have made, like, the sea monsters. Like, they should have made the, like, this weird squid-like whatever thing from...
From Tonga Trench?
Yeah. That would have been awesome. They should have made a magma buoy guy.
Yes.
And he has a buoy.
He could have come with the magma buoy.
Magma buoy. Yeah. And then they should have made the dolphin doctor dude. Mm-hmm. So that way Bridger could have someone that you could, like, have a love triangle of, like, you leave my lady alone, grumpy.
Yeah, and then we get a heroic figure who isn't in the UEO uniform, like Lucas. We get a second one.
Yeah. You could also put him in shorts. It's fine. He wears them.
Yes. His comes with a little cardboard card of his silent family on the video screen who don't talk to Bridger when he calls.
Yes, please. We get the little props and it's like a little cardboard TV screen.
It's grandma and the cousins.
Yes, I would love this so much. After the opening credits, we cut to Krieg settling in with his new roomies.
Trying so hard.
We got one dude who is just like mean and chanting things.
He's centering himself. He practices transcendental meditation.
And then
very loud.
And then Mars is doing clapping push-ups.
Yes.
And when Krieg interrupts them to be like, guys, can we just keep it down? Mars is going to kill him because he lost count.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love it so much. They're like, we don't fucking care about you, dude. We're going to murder you.
Between the rank gym sweat smell and all of the burning incense from the other one.
You can't smell the fish poop.
Okay, yeah, it all comes together. There we go.
So Krieg's like, I can't take this. He starts going through his binders and pulls out his very, very large UEO Trapper Keeper.
Mm-hmm.
And I want it so bad.
Because this is a supply issue, so it is Krieg's time. This is his remit. This is on his desk.
So he takes his Trapper Keeper, and he marches over to the ward room where Bridger is on hold with the UEO about this damn chip, getting ready to throw his oatmeal at the screen.
I've made a point in an earlier episode about how I think one of the biggest divisions between Sequest DSV and the rest of the vague, nebulous, like, Star Trek genre, yeah. Star Trek subgenre, is that the stakes are often much lower.
Yeah.
At this point in the episode, the villain is a web catalog phone tree.
Yes.
You don't get lower stakes than
yes.
this.
Yes. Well, and I love, like, this mundane aspect yeah. that they show of, like, he is on fucking hold for half an hour waiting to talk to someone at the UEO about mm-hmm, this mm-hmm. damn chip he needs. And so Krieg joins them, and while they're still on hold, Bridger's a little tired because he's rooming with Lucas and it doesn't seem to be going well.
Aren't there like 150, 250 people on this boat?
Do you think he's going to let anyone else take Lucas? Do you think
that's
he's going to let...
He claimed Lucas.
He's like, oh, I'm not letting you go to Ortiz. You're not staying with Krieg. Like, no fucking way. You're coming here, kiddo.
I just mean only rehousing 30 seems like none of the senior staff should have to take roommates.
Well, here's the thing is the senior team all has, like, the senior staff all has their own rooms.
They have the biggest
rooms. They have their own biggest rooms.
You know what? You got me. You thought this through more than I did.
Yeah, everyone else is already sharing, probably with someone else. So you would then have, like, four people in a room.
They're all in the hallway, like lower decks.
Yeah. 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 So you're going with the big rooms where people can hang out, roll out their yoga mat to sleep on. Why do they all have camping pads? I'm very curious about this.
Standard issue UEO.
I guess it's for when they all, like, possibly go adventuring. I mean, Lucas also had, like, a sleeping bag that we see in a later scene.
Yes, that's yeah. true. Well, he doesn't have the standard issue bed. He's in a closet in the tubes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when they finally come off hold, they get a guy at UEO who they cannot see his face. His camera is straight at his chest. And I love this little thing where, like, Bridger is like, hey, I can't see your face. And the dude, like, ducks down and is like, you can see my face now. I can't keep my face here. I can't move my camera. But you see it, okay? We've seen it. We're good. Okay.
It's very uncomfortable to stand here. They won't move the camera.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, the thing with this very comic exchange, once they get their customer service representative, who is very not interested in providing customer service, the unhelpful phone bank is in India, because of course it is.
No, we don't know that it is.
His accent sure is.
He is. But when the other guy comes over, he doesn't have an Indian accent. It could be anywhere. This could just be a guy that has an Indian accent.
Whether the phone bank is in India or their representative is just of Indian descent, the hack comedy of
you know how it is,
guys.
Yes, I know.
That yeah. 90s racial stereotyping.
It's bad. It's bad, but yeah. I will say it's not necessarily in India, but it's bad.
It does not matter.
Does not matter.
The jokes are good. He could have had any accent in the world. We could have met a person from India who has any other job anytime in these 10 episodes.
They could
have, didn't happen, though.
They could have just switched the accents on the supervisor and him.
They could have.
And it would have not been that.
Any of the scientists that work on the ship or with them off the ship could have been Indian, too.
True.
It's the first time we hear this accent, and it's in a phone bank that is supremely unhelpful.
Yeah, so they can't help. The dude's like, so your order's in. It's being processed. And they're like, well, when? It's been months. And he's like, I'm not fulfillment. You got to call fulfillment. It's being processed. And they're like, well, can you transfer us? I don't transfer. Call back. They're like, well, I want to talk to your supervisor. So then...
And this supervisor is gleefully evil. Why is he like this?
And incredibly Southern? Incredibly Southern. He
will stoop down to get in camera just so he can see you in the eyes while he smiles and tells you how much he's not helping you.
His accent goes along with Dr. Levin's beard from that one episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Southern accent dude, supervisor, is not helpful. Very like, this is just an AC thing. This isn't life or death. You can wait. Have them sleep on deck if they're so, like, grumpy about being hot. We're on a submarine! Like, he's like, well, you should have thought about that. What do you mean you should have thought about that?
Bridger has an aside to Krieg in this, quote, if I wanted a nuclear warhead, I'd have it in an hour.
Yes, this is very true.
Makes
this
you think.
Very true. Mm. Mm-hmm. So Krieg brings up the fact that he, you know, could put a little call out to a salvage operator to get them the part. Bridger's like, uh-huh, okay, what's the name? Well, it's just this, what's his name?
The Regulator. The Regulator. He who regulates.
Air conditioning.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
There we go. That's why you need the regulator.
Yeah.
You need the compressor. You need the heat exchange.
Yeah. And so Bridger knows who this guy is and is instantly like, no, he's a thief. No, he's just a really good salvager. No, he finds things before they sink. He's a thief.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not.
So, yeah, he puts his foot down, crosses the hallway to go to his room, where Lucas is jamming on air guitar.
to the smoke machine.
Yeah, he's put some hair metal band in the smoke hologram.
And Bridger just closes the door and goes back to Krieg and is like, okay, but I don't want to know about any of it.
Nothing bends your principles like some well-placed air guitar.
And so he leaves, and Lucas comes out and is like, so did it work? We good? Mm-hmm. Because this was the plan all along, mm-hmm. is that Krieg was like, hey, Lucas, drive Bridger nuts enough that he agrees to this because he doesn't want to spend another minute with you. And Lucas is like, yeah, absolutely. I can do that. I'm a teenager.
I love to be annoying. This is what I was gonna do anyway. Yay! So we cut to the undersea lair of the Regulator.
It does say Regulator's lair.
While he is speaking like a superhero cartoon villain,
yes.
And he lives in the Jungle Cruise queue.
Yes. So the camera. So okay, we're hearing him threatening a man and beating him up.
Mm-hmm.
We do not see him. Instead, we are panning through his lair. We're seeing that he has several parrots.
Live parrots.
There's an orangutan.
Yes.
There's just all this weird ass shit. We got a globe. We got one of the.
There's so many globes. We have
so
globes of like the star field and
glass globes and map globes and just all types of shit. And we eventually get over to seeing him with the guy that he's threatening, who cheated hit on him. Or not cheated on him, but cheated him out of stuff. It would be interesting.
And he throws this man into the pool in the bottom of his lair to
and it's the
scuba out into the sea.
Except it's the type of pool that you absolutely think for a second, like, that has piranhas in it. Just so dead. But no, it's just like, go swim away, you stupid ass.
So while we haven't seen his face, I do want to introduce the actor. The Regulator is played by John Bedford Lloyd. Most recently, he's made waves as the main villain of Ozark Season 2.
Mm.
But you have seen him in The Bourne Supremacy, where he played Teddy, one of the CIA lanyards going around the desks and saying, oh my god, that's Jason Bourne.
What?
Yes.
What? We have to rewatch that. I have to, like, see him now. He acts the shit out of this.
He really does. He really does.
He goes so hard, and I love him so much. So, after he throws the dude into the pool and yells at him to go back to his boat, bottom feeder, he turns to his orangutan.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting a call, so he tells the orangutan, Burn, to sit there and look tough.
Yes.
And he is off camera speaking. And when the camera opens, it is Krieg and Lucas on the other side, and they are very confused.
I think Lucas spends the next, like, 15 minutes of this episode in the belief that the Regulator is the orangutan. That's just him. That's what he looks like.
That's what he looks like.
He was in a horrible accident.
And so Krieg explains that they need this chip. This is what they're looking for. And they're like, you know, what do you want for it? And in addition to, you know, a whole lot of UEO credits.
Wait, the UEO issues currency?
Yes.
Since when?
There's money. They have money.
They have their own UEO money?
I guess, yeah.
This seems like up to this point, the UEO has been, like, the UN with a much stronger independent military. Now they are the government.
Pretty much.
Lots of other nations and confederations of nations exist beneath the UEO, but it's still the government now. They make the money.
Is it like the Euro?
Okay,
it's an agreement, right? Probably like people opt into it type thing. And so then you have the Euro to be like a...
The UEOO.
Yeah, the UEOO.
It's even that, though, feels like a lot more non-military authority than the UEO has shown previously.
I don't know what to tell you. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's UEO credit. Maybe there's still Confederation money. Mm-hmm. It's just that the UEO also has a thing, which maybe, like, I don't know, like, converts easier. You have a better conversion rate if you convert it within a UEO territory type thing.
Sure, sure. Like, I only bring it up because I am so much more interested in world building than the television program Sequest DSV is. Like,
that's what the fan fiction's for.
I want to know about what life in this world is like beyond the hull of the ship.
Yeah.
And that doesn't come up that often.
No, and it typically isn't that different from 1993. and so, yeah, so he wants that. He wants some other things.
He wants a nitrous tank?
Yes, a nitrous tank, and he wants 200 pounds of bananas.
200 pounds of bananas! Which is why Lucas believes the orangutan is indeed the regulator himself.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Krieg is like, okay, I maybe can't get that many bananas, but like, yeah, we can do this. This will be fine. The regulator ends this call by saying, "We done? Blood."
And Krieg's like, yeah, blood, got it. Yeah, blood, 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 definitely
and,
blood.
And I'm over here like, blood what? What does that even mean?
Blood
like,
is thicker than bananas, my friend.
I want blood too? I will take
I will
your
have
blood?
Some blood, please.
We are swearing on this upon blood? What does the blood mean? Do you just think the word blood is intimidating?
That's what UEO currency is. It's blood back.
It's blood money.
Blood bucks.
Yeah.
UEO blood bucks.
Some time goes by, and Krieg is down by the launch bay waiting for the regulator to come.
Mm-hmm.
And he is just a bundle of energy. He's leaping over shit instead of taking the stairs.
Yeah, he's fidgeting, he's nervous, he's wired, which is noticed by Chief Crocker, who says, "Hey, calm down." He puts his pants on like the rest of us, and Krieg looks at him and shoots back, "Well, you haven't seen his pants, have you?" We've seen his pants. How impressive do you find his pants?
The pants are fine. They're not that impressive. The boots.
The boots, though.
The boots, though.
The armor-plated boots.
The boots look like something the Terminator wears. It is amazing.
So, yes, he does indeed enter. We see the face of the regulator. Please describe the costume of this one who regulates.
Okay, we got Terminator boots.
Terminator boots.
We got,
like military surplus pants?
Train driver pants.
Train driver pants.
I think they look kind of train driver-ish. We got a western shirt.
Mm-hmm.
We got a duster, like it's Firefly.
Suspenders over the shirt holding up those train pants.
He has very long hair.
Mm-hmm.
He has his hat, his big hat.
Big cowboy hat with like leather tassels.
Uh-huh. And then he has his steampunk-esque science-y goggles. I love this man so much.
Little round glasses that have the shades that cup all the way to the face,
yes.
Right? And block
That's
out
why
periphery.
I say they're like steampunky,
yeah.
But they're science-y because they're like this blue glass-ish thing.
Sure,
and not
sure.
All metal-y. So they remind me of, like, a scientist.
This is a man who would try to talk to you at the bus station, and you would ignore him. You would pretend he is not there.
This is a man that would have ridden up and down my college dorm elevator just trying to make friends with people. I knew this man.
Well, yeah, you went to art school. He was in Bourne Supremacy. He was a visiting lecturer.
This is totally what an art school student would look like for a while.
So the regulator and Chief Crocker get into a bit of a tough guy off as
yes.
they lock eyes. And
yeah.
And the thing is, this is Crocker's job, right? To be the security chief.
Yes.
I never buy him as tough and intimidating. I buy him as capable.
Serious?
Serious, but he's a friendly guy. He's a cuddly guy.
Yeah.
He's a guy's guy, but I've never find him intimidating.
No.
It doesn't work ever for me.
Well, and what's weird to me, too, is, like, Hitchcock, like, you know, shakes hand with the regulator guy, too. And I was like, that's not what she would do. She would absolutely be staring down this dude.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck's wrong with you? Like, get off my boat.
This is a dude whose reputation is he visits boats, things go missing, and then the boat goes missing.
Yeah.
Like, she should hate this man.
Yeah. I do not agree with, like, the approach of her character in this greeting, because I was like, she would absolutely be, like, Krieg, get him off my boat as soon as possible shit. But Krieg has the stuff for him. He only has 138 pounds of bananas, because that's all they had on the boat.
But he's definitely got 500 UEO bucks, because he's counted it 8 times.
The regulator would like to see the rest of the ship before he leaves. And he's like holding the thermal chip hostage to try to get this. And they're like, nope, you're getting back on that boat.
Crocker gives the biggest lie ever, saying there's no one available to give a tour. You give a tour every episode. There's always someone getting a tour of this boat.
He's like, we don't have anyone to show tourists around. And he's like, well, I wouldn't say I'm a tourist. And he's like, no, that would be an insult to tourism. What the fuck, Crocker?
This is also why it's not intimidating. These are shit lines. These are bad.
And so they yell to, like, load up the bananas.
And the whole time, they're having this, like, dick measuring contest of who's the baddest ass on SeaQuest. We're getting comedy cutaways to this orangutan doing bits in the corner.
And
what am I supposed to be feeling? Am I supposed to be scared of this man? What is this episode?
Just go with it. It's a wild ride. You just go with it. You just accept it. The orangutan runs away down the hallway. And they're like, oh my god, we gotta go after the orangutan. And this orangutan, Vern, is not fast.
No.
He's not fast at all.
He's a dumpy little guy.
They cannot catch him.
No.
Every time they turn the corner, they've just missed where he went and they didn't know where to go.
As it just, you know, lumber stumbles the way an orangutan on foot does. It makes more sense when Vern gets to the stairway and is just like climbing down higgledy-piggledy like a Jacob's ladder.
Yeah.
That's where it makes sense, but, like, on the flatland, you got his ass. What are you doing?
And so, as they're, you know, chasing after him, they stumble upon an ensign who's just, like, staring at the regulator with the best look on his face. And Crocker's like, oh, have you seen anything unusual, ensign? And he's like, is that a trick question, sir?
I'm looking at this dude's Terminator boots right now.
This dude's really fucking weird.
So Ensign Philly here is played by Tom Provost, who has done a lot of various things.
Oh, yeah?
For one thing, he wrote the 2000 thriller Under Suspicion, starring Gene Hackman and Morgan Freeman.
Oh.
Have you heard of Under Suspicion?
No.
That makes sense. It made back around 6% of its budget in theatrical release. Huge failure.
Oh, poor dude.
But his current line is as an editor for reality television.
Oh!
He is the primary editor on Guy's Grocery Games, for instance.
Okay. You know, as long as you got a career, you're working, paycheck.
Someone's got to do it, yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
And here he is playing Ensign Philly.
As they continue on their chase, we go to C Deck, where Lucas is with Darwin and Wes Phelan, and he is showing Darwin a picture and naming it and trying to get Darwin to say it back because the device got fried in the heat and they're having to like reprogram it with like a base language.
Lots of flashcards of various nouns like boat and ape and did you catch the setup for the gag? I bet you did.
And so they get to the one where it's a dolphin. Darwin is supposed to say dolphin, but he just says Darwin.
Darwin, yeah. No, that's me.
And Lucas is getting very frustrated. He's like, no, dolphin, Darwin. Wes Phelan has to, you know, come in and is like, you know, let's Try this again.
Right. Cooler heads prevail. She comes at it from a different angle. She has the flashcard for man, and it's like, man, Lucas. There's a difference. The general category and the specific, right? Man, Lucas, Dolphin, Darwin. And they start chanting this at each other, and this is the best day in Lucas's life. Because two people, well, one people and one dolphin at least, are
thinking he's a man,
recognizing his powerful masculinity. Yes, Lucas, man,
I'm a man. I'm not a boy no more.
And like the figure on this flashcard is not like, you know, your abstract guy on the restroom sign man. This is a huge Cro-Magnon muscle Hulk. This is the silhouette of Ensign Mars, actually. Yeah.
He's like, yes, I look like this.
Yeah, man. Lucas, man. Lucas, man.
And right at this moment, as as Darwin is chanting these things, the regulator walks around the corner as they are doing it. And Wes Phelan shoots up and is like, oh, no, that, like, you can't be in here. Like, turn it off. This classified. Is classified. And Lucas is just like, cool.
He looks at the regulator, this clown creature, who Ensign Philly recognizes as the strangest thing on legs. And he looks at him and he just breathes to himself, very cool.
Lucas might have his first, like, crush.
What is this episode?
On an adult. No, he had Hitchcock. I guess she's,
yeah. He needs to get on land.
He needs to go meet anyone else.
If only in, I don't know, say 2 weeks, there was an episode about him meeting other super smart teens.
Lucas walks over to introduce himself to the regulator, and they do the dumbest ass handshake I have ever seen in my life. Like Lucas puts his hand out, like, upward.
Yeah, like they're going to do the Predator sexual Tyrannosaurus handshake. But instead, they interlace fingers. With their vertical hands.
We're doing it right now, and it's so weird. How the fuck did they think that was a good idea? It's so like, weird.
First off, no one shakes hands like this. Second, it's incredibly intimate.
It's so intimate. No, you don't interlock fingers with someone you don't know.
This is how you grasp the hand of someone who's been like a part of your soul for 30 years and they're dying.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
They just met.
So, like, the regulator dude also has these, like, ridiculous gloves on. And, like, one of them has, like, some, like, metal contraption on the finger.
Yeah, he's got a thimble.
Yeah, like, it's a giant... It makes his hands, like, these giant sausage hands, too. Yeah. So, giant sausage hands with Lucas's hand interlocking their fingers. It's the weirdest-ass thing ever.
Before we go on... Uh-huh. I've been talking about this episode on, I think I've mentioned on this show, I think I've mentioned it on Space Puppets mm-hmm. with Josh. This is the episode, something in my heart gave way, and I gave in to Sequest.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you why, I think I can tell you when, but there's just something about this episode that
I love this episode so much.
It's structurally so strange. The behaviors of all the characters are bizarre, but it's the lost television that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Like, especially for something that had to be great, the most expensive show or near it of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just anchoring the new 93 season on Sundays. This was going to be the hit. Huge advertising budget, full court press. And this is still what they make, these weird, weird things that I don't know if I like it or not, but I know I'm compelled by the thing.
I like it. So here's the thing with it. It's like they could have gone incredibly serious with this whole episode, right?
Yes, it would have been better. It would have been like... From a factual, objective point of view, bullet points, better, whatever that means.
There is something I love about this. And finding out that it was directed by Tonga Trench,
yes.
Director.
Yes.
Makes so much fucking sense. Yes. Because it is the bizarre shit yes. of that episode too, where within it, though, you have like these very serious conversations happening. Like,
right.
We're going to get some of that with Lucas in a while. In Tonga Trench, we have it between like Krieg and Hitchcock.
Finally talking about their weird thing that was.
Yes. And there's some wonderful stuff that comes from it in these just like, as the, you know, that's the one where the dude's like, touch my ass. Richard, touch my ass. I can crack nuts with this. Like, right? Like, you have to think about, like, we thought that episode was crazy, but we don't talk about it as crazy as we talk about this one. But that dude is like, I can crack nuts with my ass.
At least that one has a recognizable three-act structure. This one is wild.
I appreciate episodes like this because, again, it's what you're saying, it's a lost part of television that we don't get anymore because we're rushing through these seasons. We're not giving them episodes. We don't have the time
to do
different things, to take it a different way, to try a different approach.
Making 10 episodes over 3 years leads to such different pressures and outcomes than making 25 episodes in 1 year.
Yeah. I love this episode. Is it good?
I don't know.
But I love this episode so much.
All because of this handshake. Is
that... After this handshake, this introduction, the Regulator goes into this whole speech to Lucas about how, like, you shouldn't hold creatures against their will.
Mm-hmm.
And Lucas is like, oh, like, he's free. Like, he can go feed. And Westfield's like, shut up, Lucas! And the Regulator's like, you know, you're on the verge of the future, Lucas. Don't let these uniforms stand in your way.
So there are two mainstays. Go ahead.
I can't forget that Lucas says, absolutely superb.
Yes, as the Regulator walks away, Lucas just says, absolutely superb. What great bookends to their conversation. Very cool.
Because, like, Crocker and them catch up to him and, like, guide him out of, like, hey, we gotta leave. We're looking for a thing. And
an ape?
They don't tell him that. They're just like, hey, we gotta come this way. We're getting out of here. This is confidential. So over another part of the ship, Bridger mm-hmm. gets off the maglev and Vern gets on.
We're doing like Dunstan checks in shit in the middle of this.
And he's just like, hey, Crocker, there's an orangutan. And he's like, what side of the ship, sir? I'm going to be right there. Like, not like, oh, like, let me give an explanation. Just like, I'll be right there, sir.
So this episode is really the beginning of two mainstay plots that will continue throughout Sequest, particularly the first season.
Mm-hmm.
First is, of course, Lucas is tempted to the dark side.
Yes.
That goes through the whole show. Every once in a while, it's going to keep happening. But the other, Sequest Season 1 broadly has three kinds of episodes.
Yeah.
Number one, look at this cool thing we found.
Yeah.
Number two, it's hard to live in the ocean.
Yeah.
Number three, which begins here, a once respected scientist goes too far.
Yeah.
That's going to keep happening so much throughout the first season. And the Regulator is like patient zero. Here's where it starts.
Yes. Vern gets off the maglev, makes mm-hmm. his way to C-Deck, and Lucas is working with Darwin on more flashcards, and he's holding one up, and Darwin starts going, ape! And he's like, no, like, Darwin, this is a cow. Cow! No, ape! 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 Because Vern is right there next to Lucas, and mm-hmm, Lucas, like, mm-hmm. looks over and is like, holy shit! And, like, falls off his chair as Vern makes, like, does the very... stereotypical orangutan like screech that mm-hmm, they do mm-hmm. in every movie.
The 80 yard in. Yeah. They went to the classic sound font. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is time for everyone to reconvene. We found Vern, we found the Regulator, and Bridger is caught up to speed in this thing that he did not want to be involved in. That was the rule, Krieg.
Yes. Yes. Regulator rushes in and grabs Vern and, like, holds out a, like, stun device thing and tells, like, everyone get out of here. Like, put your sticks down.
Mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
some of the dudes that were, like, I don't know, like, cleaning the moon pool out with, like, pools.
Yeah.
mesh.
They were going to net him with the pool boy net. Yeah.
And he's like, you're a threat to me. I'm going to stun you all with my, like, bomb-looking device. But Bridger comes in and is just like, hello, Leslie.
Bridger knows everybody.
What are you doing on my fucking boat?
He knows everybody.
So Bridger gets shit done. He's mm-hmm. like, Leslie, because he knows this dude's first name, give me the chip, gives it to Krieg, addresses the orangutan because he knows him too.
He knows Vern.
Is like, hey, Vern, you really shouldn't hang out with this dude. Doesn't look good for you. Also give me back the device you stole from Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm. He's got Hitchcock's, like, comm radio with the orange plastic, the prop that I love.
And also, like, get off my boat.
Yeah.
They take him to the launch bay to get rid of him. And after, like, he's on the launch, Crocker realizes that the regulator stole his gun.
Incredible pickpocket, this guy. Or Vern.
Or Vern.
So he immediately sets out. He launches in a launch. He's ordering other men to come in speeders. We have speeders now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big boat chase. And you might think this is the big climactic action sequence. You're wrong. This is the halfway point of the episode.
And Bridger just radios out like, Crocker, get the hell back here. Like, you're wasting more money and gas trying to chase this dude. We could just buy another gun.
Guns ship quick, apparently. This is what we know.
Yeah, it's not a problem. Yeah. I'll call the dude up. We'll have a gun tomorrow. Like, whatever. Crocker has to head back.
Mm-hmm.
Vern, in the shuttle, hands the regulator the gun.
Mm-hmm.
And there is just the 138 pounds of bananas behind them.
Yes.
Which is great for all of this.
The regulator does not recognize this model of sidearm. He's taking a look at it like, wow, this must be worth something to somebody. We'll definitely put that in the inventory. Good lift. Good job, Vern.
Yeah. And so they get stuff fixed, and we get, like, some scenes of people leaving, like, you know, Krieg's roommates are leaving, heading out. Ford comes by and is like, hey, Bridger wants you too in this meeting. Krieg's a little nervous about that, has to, you know, zip up his jumpsuit a little bit
a little more.
And so in Bridger's quarters, Lucas is packing up his stuff because he's going to be able to go back to his room too. Being sassy.
Yeah.
Lucas has got a chip on his shoulder.
There was another adult who touched him in a very affirming way and said he doesn't have to be a Mr. Military Man, even on this boat.
Bridger says something and he makes some comment about, like, or oh. Put on a jumpsuit and snap too.
And Bridger's like, what'd you say, kid? And he said, I said yes, sir.
So as Ford and Krieg and Wes Phelan are, like, filing in, they call up the professor, Mr. McSteamy.
That's his name, Professor McSteamy, the hologram robot man.
Yeah.
Because this meeting is just for everyone to learn the facts of life about Mr. Leslie Regulator.
Leslie Verena.
Yes.
Mr. Professor McSteamy here. Is going to give us his bio from Wikipedia.
Yes.
That
he was a child genius. He got a PhD in geophysics at the age of 17. He was the star aquanaut of the 90s. And then things took a turn. He developed the Hemo Sponge.
Uh-huh.
Which is a sort of artificial organ that one could theoretically use to breathe underwater.
Yeah.
And he wanted to use this to prove, quote, spherical evolution, his pet theory he invented.
Mm-hmm. And in 1999, he was banished from the science community for trying to attach things to humans so they
could, the Hema sponge
so they could breathe underwater. And they were like, no, we're not going to do that. And then in 2003, he faked his own death by burning down his houseboat and leaving a suicide note.
In between, he put his fortune into founding an underwater settlement that totally failed.
Totally failed, yeah.
It's unclear whether he had to breathe underwater to move there, or it was more of a dome situation.
Bridger's like, yeah, so, you know, he's a genius whose every effort failed, and he had to fake, you know, his suicide to escape ridicule. And Lucas is like, I can sympathize with that.
Can you?
That's a bigger conversation, Lucas, maybe.
You lost some valuable data in your dolphin program. That's all that happened to you.
I feel like you could go deeper with the fact that he probably had a very rough childhood growing up, sure, and the fact that he couldn't, sure, like, relate to peers and was, like, shoved through college very early and various stuff like that. But also, like, Lucas, maybe don't relate to that.
He's really dramatizing. But, like, yes, the story of the regulator, like, you cannot fall that far without being at the heights to begin with.
Yes.
Right. And so yes, this is the grim tale of this wunderkind totally flaming out, and now him eat banana.
Yes. And Bridger, like, ran into him in a supermarket a few years ago, which is how he knows that, like, he didn't die and he existed.
Again, this fucking underground black market arms dealer they've contacted that is leading Lucas to the dark side. It's all about the Lucas's soul walks a knife edge. Like, oh yeah, I met that idiot at the supermarket 6 months ago when I was in my island grieving man phase. I just let it slide because this dude fucking sucks.
I knew he wasn't dead. I just didn't think I needed to tell anyone.
What is this episode?
So then Lucas asks what spherical evolution is.
And they do not answer.
No, it's just like he's trying to find the center of the universe. And he thinks that's so cool.
That sounds cool. That sounds like poetic. If you think it's poetic, that sounds cool. That's a way that someone in 1993 would write about a character looking to, like, demonstrate the existence of the Higgs boson. Mm-hmm. They're finding the center of the universe. Like, whoa.
Whoa.
That's not what Lindsay the regulator means by it.
Leslie.
That's the one.
Yeah. Leslie and Vern, meanwhile, are sitting in their launch, staring at the SeaQuest, eating bananas.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love it. There's this wonderful few seconds of where they're just eating bananas. Occasionally glancing at each other. Like, yeah, this is a good banana. These are perfect ripeness. We're going to have to freeze some of these, Vern.
They're hanging out. Because they're waiting. What are they waiting for? They're waiting for Darwin. Get a little bit hungry.
Because they, once they see him, decide to net him.
Mm-hmm. He's a dolphin thief. That's what he is.
Stealing the fucking dolphin. And takes him back to his lair, where he loses his damn mind.
See, Leslie the Regulator has fallen prey to the most common misconception of SeaQuest. If there's one thing people say about this show, it's, oh yeah, the one where the dolphin talks. And that's not true. You, the loyal Whiskers listener, know there is a computer program that interprets his dolphin clicks and whistles.
So if that thing isn't there, you don't get interpretation services.
The absolute sea genius of the 1990s didn't get that part of the tour that they didn't give him, so he thinks that Darwin, by only doing clicks and whistles, is just fucking with him and won't help him achieve his dreams.
Yes. I love it, because he's going on with this whole thing about, you know, your mind is complex, it's more complex than mine, and, like, you're so smart, like, I'm supposed to be the smartest, but dolphins are smarter, and, like, you speak at Darwin squeaks, and he's like, I have no idea what you're saying to me.
He's acting his heart out at this mechanical dolphin on a stick.
And he's like, I have fish. I have fish for you, Darwin. Speak English to me. And Vern just throws him a fish. This man should have won an award for acting his heart out at this mechanical dolphin. My God.
The only person to win an Oscar for supporting actor for a television series.
This dude.
They bent the rules. It was that good.
So back on the SeaQuest, Westphalen and Bridger are doing science.
They're doing sponge science.
And Crocker, Lucas, and Ortiz come in to break the news that Darwin is missing, that he was put out to feed 12 hours ago, and they haven't seen him, and he hasn't come back.
Right, they're doing the Darwin ping to call him, no answer. Ortiz gets a little grim mentioning that there is a tuna trawler up the coast,
yeah,
and they say they're using safe nets, but you never do know.
And Lucas is just, like, beside himself. He's like, I keep calling, and, like, he's not here. And Bridger's like, well, we'll just keep calling him. Like, what else can we do? And so Crocker and Ortiz leave.
There is this unstated undercurrent from, you know, the adults in the room, Westphalen and Bridger, that Darwin's his own dolphin. He's our good friend. We love him, but he doesn't belong to us.
Yeah, like, okay, hopefully nothing bad happened to him, but he could also just choose not to come back one day.
Yeah.
Lucas is so not having this.
Absolutely not. He's
like, that's it? You're just going to keep fucking working? Like, what?
Yeah, Westphalen tries to distract and divert him by getting him involved in this sponge science.
And how the sponge is going to filter the water for Dolphin's tank, and it'll be really good. And Lucas is like, oh, yeah, but, like, Darwin's not here, so maybe I should use this to wash my car. Oh, wait, I don't have one, because I'm stuck here.
Lucas doesn't have any friends. Lucas only has dads. Lucas hates dads.
And Bridger is so over this. Oh, man, the daggers that are happening in this episode. And he's like, that's it. You're coming with me. And he's like, oh, shit. What do I fucking do? And so Bridger uses the conference phone on the wall. Fucking phone.
Your classic Cisco phone.
I love that phone.
It's one thing when they have it on the table where it belongs, but when you wall mount
it
and pretend it's this, like, near future 2018 cutting edge thing. Ugh.
I love it so much. And so he calls Krieg to meet them in the ward room and then, mm-hmm. like, gestures for Lucas to follow him with such intensity. So in the ward room, when Krieg shows up, he's like, hey, I need Leslie's phone number. And Krieg's like, who? The regulator.
The regulator. He who regulates.
And so Lucas is like, what, you think he can help us find Darwin? He's like, no, I think he took him. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. Obviously, Lucas, catch up here. And Lucas is not like, no, he wouldn't.
He believes in the freedom of these creatures.
And so they call him up, and Vern is again the one sitting there. And
I love that through the entire episode, zero exceptions, Bridger talks to Vern as a person.
Yes.
He only talks about Vern as a partner and Leslie's equal or better partner.
Yes.
He's not a pet. He's not a mascot. He's like 65% of the operation.
Yes. Yes, he does. And I love that. But I think that it has something, like, it's a fun character choice, too, because it has something to, like, with Darwin.
For this episode, that when it does comedy, specifically orangutan-based comedy,
yeah,
it's so broad. How many people saw him running around the Sequest and literally fell out of their chairs,
yeah.
Right? To have this a little higher concept, a little more subtle running gag is very good.
Mm-hmm. The regulator's like, speak to me. And he's like, I want my dolphin back. Mm-hmm. You have him. I want him. The regulator, like, hops in front of the camera and is like, he's, you know, he's not your dolphin. You have no right to conduct experiments on him. Mm-hmm. I let him go. And, like, hangs up on them. And he's like, fucking bastard. I'm gonna come
yeah,
get you.
Yeah.
So Bridger is like, okay, here's what's gonna go on. Lucas, you got the data from the vocoder?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, well, yeah, but it's all scrambled and it's all messed up. He's like, well, you're going to find it. You're going to find, like, Darwin's speech patterns and all that stuff. And we're going to have, like, O'Neill.
They continue to say absolute nonsense whenever Lucas needs to do a computer thing.
Yes.
It's been scrambled down to the bytes.
It's like, well, you're going to find them all.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but Lucas is going to make it work, and they're going to have, like, O'Neill and Ortiz use that communication that they just did, and they're going to analyze it, because apparently they recorded it, mm-hmm. to find if Darwin is there. They're going to try to, like, narrow down to his signal.
Mm-hmm.
And
on the bridge, O'Neill's like, I don't know if we could identify that this dolphin definitely is Darwin. And they're like, wait, you hear a dolphin?
There's a dolphin? Okay, we're definitely going over there.
That's probable cause. That's good enough. Let's go.
That is probably all our dolphin. And so they all get on a launch. Crocker, we got Bridger, we got Lucas, we got Mars.
Got Mars, yeah.
We got other dude.
And Crocker is handing out earplugs for everybody.
Yes. And so...
probably so Lucas can do more of his air guitar.
And so then we get a bit of a scene between Bridger and Lucas, where they're sitting there, they're kind of trapped, they gotta talk, gotta have a chat.
What else are they gonna do? The ocean is kind of slow. If this was a show about a jet plane,
yeah,
there would be fewer of these scenes. They'd just be there.
So Lucas has even bigger chip on his shoulder throughout all of this. Bridger is like, hey, are there times that you feel separate from the crew? Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, you're all adults and I'm 16.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously.
And so, like, Bridger kind of psychoanalyzes him based on who he hangs out with when. And, like, he's got his chummy friends and he's got his science friends and it's feeding different parts of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you're like a normal 16 when you're with Ortiz and, you know, Krieg, but you also have this thing you need to feed, you know, your imagination, your interest, your curiosity, and that's when you hang out with Westphalen.
Except when she's doing sponge stuff. We hate sponges.
Well, sometimes we're just a teenager.
Sponges make me angry.
Brings up the fact that, you know, you're like this and some people probably see it as a behavioral problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably why your, like, dad, you know, brought you here.
And Lucas says, well, my dad's just a huge asshole. And Bridger pauses for a moment and thinks, that could be, but there's other explanations too.
Like, maybe your dad was worried you were going to also turn into a weirdo.
And thought some, like, military-style structure would steer you away from the weirdo path. I'm not saying he's not an asshole.
Some group projects?
Yeah.
Working with others?
This is a really long scene to lay out the character parallel that was very obvious 15 minutes ago.
Yes.
But it is nice for them to have a moment of quiet side by side talking.
Well, and it is like the first time that it really gets addressed directly. With Lucas about the fact that, like, he was left here by his father.
Mm-hmm.
He's with adults, probably kind of lonely, probably doesn't feel like he fits in all the time.
This is not the ideal development environment.
No. Yeah, and it's like it's like gets talked around and about him, but it's the first time they do address it.
Yeah, and with someone as unique as Lucas, what is the ideal environment, right? We have to pick which parts of Lucas we develop and what risks we're willing to run.
Yeah. So in a way, it's actually the perfect environment because he does have all these things that he can tap into. He can go be a kid with Krieg and then
the closest thing they have to a 16-year-old is Krieg. Benjamin Krieg.
And Ortiz.
Yeah.
And then he can, you know, go be a science genius with Westphalen. And he can have a dad.
So they make it to the regulator's lair on the Madagascar plateau.
Yes.
Of course, it's drippy. The gateway is drippy.
Got a drippy lock. Inside the lair, Leslie is going off at Darwin about how, you know, dolphins are on this coin and you all sleep with one eye open because you know things. So, like, tell me things. They knock on the hatch and he, like, freaks the fuck out, yelling, like, just scrambles up and yells, Bridger, go away! He's like, Leslie, I know you're in there. Like, Leslie's dead. I saw it on the news. It's such a child-like thing of like, no, I'm not in here.
No, I can't hear you. Neener, neener. There's a banana in my ear.
You can't see me. I'm behind a blanket.
But Bridger knows the way in.
Mm-hmm.
He says, hey, Vern, open the door. I'll give you a banana.
And the regulator is like, Vern, you turn on me for bananas?
The way he says the word bananas. He does not say bananas. He says bananas. Again, we watched this show together. My first viewing very early in this year, like December to mid-January, right?
Yeah.
And for months, the two of us would just look at each other with no prompting and just say, bananas?
And still,
day.
Anytime we have to say the word bananas.
We do not say bananas in this home. We say bananas.
It's like, oh, I need to buy bananas at the store today. I made banana bread.
Oh, that's why you were letting the bananas get a little brown. You had bread plans. I see.
If you're not watching the show while listening to this, go watch this episode just to hear how this man says bananas.
Bananas? You can chapter skip just to the scenes with the regulator in his lair. Just like solo acting with the Darwin animatronic, and this whole sequence is amazing.
And so Bridger comes in and he's like, Leslie, he's an orangutan. This shouldn't be a surprise.
Figured out your business partner's secret weakness.
Bananas?
It's the thing you demand in payment for every job.
They come in and Lucas is just like, he sees Darwin and he's like, you stole him. Like,
yes.
His world comes crumbling down around him.
Right. The image of this guy as the renegade against the world, doing things his own way to find some secret hidden truth, falls away because, yes, he's a dolphin napper whose lair is full of, yeah, arms for secondhand sale.
Yeah.
There's big piles of ammo belts just in the corner.
The regulator is like, oh, so did he tell you I'm crazy? I was like, well, Bridger told me you were looking for the center of the universe. And so he hits play on his video that's queued up to go with visuals.
It is time to learn about the theory of spherical evolution.
And so he just has a TV that has a presentation ready to go that he has a perfectly timed speech to, because he is speaking it. It is not recorded. He is speaking. He just has a PowerPoint, basically, always ready.
You know what Vern has?
Bananas?
Yes!
About 230 pounds of them. Yes, we are told about spherical evolution.
So, nature's most perfect shape is a circle. All of nature is circles. The planets move in circular orbits. At this point, Lucas interrupts and says, well, actually, orbits are elliptical. He says, shut up, kid. You don't know what you're talking about. That's an illusion. It's fake. Ellipses are fake. It's all circles. And yes, the sun moves in a circle around the galaxy, and the galaxy moves in its circle around the universe. Also not true. Lucas lets this one slide. And so, spherical evolution, he's basically just doing time cube. You were educated stupid. But where evolution comes in it is for man to achieve his great potential, we who came out of the sea almost returned to the sea. Which is why he made the hydro sponge, and why he believes that the secrets of the universe, to find the actual physical center of the universe, which is the place of all wisdom and harmony, in a very literal way, a very literal center, the gate is kept by cetaceans, by dolphins, who in their evolutionary history came up out of the sea with the rest of land-dwelling creatures, and then returned back in. Which is why if you look at, like, whale skeletons, it looks like a land animal's bones, but the arms are all freaky weird.
So, yeah, he goes on this big thing, and Lucas is like, well, this guy here, his name's Mars. I don't know, maybe that's
That's
important.
Got some circles.
That's a circle. Does that help you? I don't...
And this makes Leslie very angry that he's being mocked.
And Lucas is like, well, I don't have to fake my suicide to sleep at night. And he's like, you're still young. You have time.
What does that mean? Is this a rite of passage for all brilliant genius teenagers? Yes. They both agree on this in different scenes.
And so the regulator is just like, you know, Darwin can tell me these things. He can speak to me. And Bridger's like, he can't talk. He doesn't speak English. He speaks dolphin. He's like, no, I heard him. I heard him. This is some military project. It's something you're hiding from me.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, let it go. Let it fucking go.
At one point, I forget the setup line, but someone just like asks him to clarify one of the absolutely insane parts of spherical evolution. And his only response is, it stands to reason. No, it doesn't, you lunatic.
And so The regulator grabs the gun that he stole from Crocker.
Yes.
And is all, you know, make him talk. Bridger does a hand signal at Dolphin to dive.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like how sometimes you just call him Dolphin.
I do not realize I do that. But does the hand signal at him and he dives down. And just as Leslie is like, you going to like shoot the gun, but mm-hmm. it's not a normal gun. We find out.
It is a sonic stun gun.
Mm-hmm, which is why they all got earplugs.
Mm-hmm,
And so it knocks the regulator down. And so they can disarm him and everyone else is fine because they have earplugs except for Vern. But he's okay.
Vern's okay.
Lucas checks on him.
Lucas checks on him and finds Ape got gills.
Yeah.
He been doing secret illegal gill surgery on Ape.
Poor Vern.
Poor Vern. He didn't ask for this. He asked for bananas.
Bananas?
Every time.
And so, regulator's basically screwed. Like, he has to let Darwin go. And so as he's doing that, you know, opening the gate, Lucas goes over to Bridger and is like, hey, do you really think I can end up like this lunatic?
While the regulator is left all alone and you can see that he's looking back on all of the failures that have plagued his life. This is just one more over the last 20 fucking years.
Mm-hmm.
The regulator is so tragic.
Yes.
Oh. This poor lost soul.
And Bridger's like, well, he was 16 once. And Lucas is like, okay, yeah. So, like, tell him about Darwin. This dude's please, gonna go fucking please. Crazy over this. And I don't want to see my future.
So yeah, what is it that keeps boy geniuses from turning into weirdo freaks?
Talking dolphins.
It is an honest, personal relationship with a dolphin.
Yep.
Dolphins are magic.
Yep. So they take the regulator back to Sequest, to the moon pool. And Lucas has definitely been explaining how it works for a while.
Right.
And Bridger's like, just show him. Lucas, stop talking.
So Lucas has got the handset and he talks into it, introduces Leslie by that name and not the regulator.
Yeah. The regulator dude immediately was like, so Darwin, do you have a sense of history? Why did the dolphins return to the water? Like, answer my questions.
So this show that has dabbled, and will again, believe me, with like this new age perception of dolphins, is look at their brains that are twice our size. What wisdom do they have? What secrets do they hold? It is fun to have an episode where that view is built into this villainous bozo.
Bridger is like, hey, Darwin, do you know where the center of the universe is? And he's like, yes.
And they're like,
where? Where is it? Where? Inside you.
Very trite, Darwin. Very, very trite. Thank you.
That's the end of the
that's
episode.
That's the end of the episode. Except for the Bob fact.
Bob fact.
Bob Ballard tells us that liquid breathing is a real possible thing. A super oxygenated fluid flowing into lungs. And apparently, one person has liquid breathed for up to 45 minutes at the time of Bob fact delivery in 1993.
Yes.
Darlin, do you have a Bob fact? Do you want me to give the Bob fact first?
Yes.
Because you have been so excited about your Bob fact. Yes. You've got a closer.
Yes.
All right.
What's your Bob fact?
My Bob fact is about the evolution of the cetacean order.
Okay.
Dolphins, whales, porpoises, etc.
Yeah.
Cetacean evolution began around 50 million years ago during the Eocene epoch, the epoch where most modern mammals arose and filled niches left by the mass extinction that preceded it, caused by a rapid increase in global temperatures. Which means that the answer to the question of why dolphins went back to the sea, fish. That is what Darwin would say.
Yeah. Okay, good Bob fact.
Tell me this Bob fact that's been burning a hole in your Bob fact pocket, please, dear.
Well, according to the Guinness World Record,
most talking dolphin.
The fastest marathon that has been run in a fruit costume.
Okay.
Was just at the 2024 Boston Marathon.
Oh, we're making history. We're living through historic times.
Where, a Canadian runner did it in 2 hours and 35 minutes and 38 seconds dressed as a banana.
As a what now?
A banana!
Thank you!
Yeah, he beat someone who did it at 2020.
As a grape?
Apple? As a fruit. I don't know if he was specifically a banana.
There's lots of fruits out there. Could be a papaya.
The one from 2020 also did, in 2022, ran dressed as the fastest dressed vegetable. But our Canadian runner.
Probably a carrot.
Fastest marathon is a banana.
There you go.
That's my Bob fact.
I really should have.
Fastest banana marathon.
I really should have trusted you when you said there would be no overlap. No chance of overlap.
I was like, there's no way.
I could Bob fact under the sun.
You know how I came across this is my fact?
I could talk about the Madagascar plateau of the sea.
I searched for banana facts, and I found a banana fact website, and one of the facts was about...
Bananas like to sleep in hammocks.
Was about the fastest marathon run as a banana.
Uh-huh.
But that website was so old, it was talking about 2011. And I'm like, there has to have been a faster marathon.
There has to have been a faster banana-thon.
As a banana. So then I did research, and it took a while, because it's always classified as the fastest fruit or the fastest vegetable. So I had to then do extra research to specify if it was a banana.
And how do they sort things that are technically fruits and that they are the mature ovary of a plant, yet are classified culinarily as a vegetable?
This is a great question.
Your avocados of the world, for instance.
I feel like this is why we need to bring back those Guinness Book of World Record books that you could buy every year. Because there's probably
the big holographic hardcover.
Yeah, about what counts where or not.
They were very rigorous. And
I'm sure they specify it. I can tell you the person who has the fastest half marathon as a fruit was dressed as a pear.
Oh, so there were two of them.
Shut up. No, that wasn't funny. I'm not going to say banana for you the good way anymore.
Well, you won't have to, because we have a completely different thing to talk about as we transition, move on down the road into the Movie Star Minute.
That's right. We gotta talk about all that jazz.
That's right. Today, as promised, as briefly mentioned recently, All That Jazz, directed by Bob Fosse in 1979, unlike The French Connection, is a movie that has Roy Scheider in nearly every scene. There are three scenes without this man.
There is enough Roy in this movie.
Over,
I approve.
Over the course of 2+ hours. The longest scene without Roy is the flashback to his character's youth dancing in seedy cabarets. So, like, Joe Gideon, the character, is in the whole movie, even if at one point it's not Roy.
Yes.
The other two are brief scenes where John Lithgow squeezes him out, which I think is just a really good way for the form of the film to communicate the story. Like, that's the point of John Lithgow's character is the... a theater director that's going to take his job when he's in the hospital. But yes, All That Jazz, if you're not familiar, is a film about theater director and film director Joe Gideon, hard-living, womanizing guy that everyone loves, although everyone knows it's bad. It's a bad thing to love this man. He's just so dang magnetic, such a perfect genius.
Mm-hmm. Semi-autobiographical for Bob Fosse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bob Fosse had a heart attack and went to the hospital, thought he was going to die while he was editing his...
A movie.
A movie about Lenny Bruce, the stand-up, while he was choreographing and working on, I believe, Chicago.
Yeah, I think it was Chicago.
So now we have self-insert Joe Gideon editing a movie called The Stand-Up. And choreographing a play called New York/LA about airplanes?
Sexy airplanes.
He makes them sexy.
Yeah. I fucking love this movie.
This is your favorite movies of all time.
This is one of my favorite movies of all times. I think it is absolutely one of the best movies ever made. There's stuff out there that talks about this as like one of the most influential movies, like important to cinema movies out there, and I absolutely fucking agree with that.
Yeah, yeah.
It is so good.
I don't think any American director has provided as much to the art of cinema in only 5 films as Bob Fosse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did Cabaret and all that jazz. And you know what? There's three more movies, too.
Yeah, you can, like, just stop there and you be like, yep, there you go.
The only rival I can think of and why I limited it to American is Satoshi Kon.
It's so good. Rorschach Schneider is so fucking good in this movie. It is absolutely phenomenal, his performance.
I mean, every moment, the way he carries the whole film, the way he carries himself, the way he carries his self-image of himself at all times.
Yeah.
But let's bring it back to Whiskers. Let's pull it in a little bit to Sequest. Does Joe Gideon have anything in common with Captain Nathan Bridger?
Aside from the face. I was going to say, everyone wants to fuck him. Everyone wants to fuck Captain Nathan Bridger.
I'll imagine him interlacing fingers with the regulator.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he doesn't like the guys, that they interlaced some fingers back when at the grocery store.
They had a torrid affair in the frozen food.
Yes! There would be a reason he doesn't want to see his ex-fling on his boat. But no, serious, everyone wants a bit of him.
I was going to say their sarcastic moments.
Absolutely.
Is a thing they should, like, there's really sweet scene in All That Jazz where he is brainstorming choreography with his, 11-year-old, 13-year-old daughter?
11.
Something like that. And she wants dad to remarry because she wants a baby brother. And he says, I'll call her tomorrow and rent you a brother. And it's the perfect match to the Bridger voice that he would use 20 years later, 15 years later.
The like, sass and sarcasm that happens and the looks he will give that say so much and give so much of that sass, there's such a crossover there. It's some of what I absolutely adore about his acting is so much is said between the lines and within those moments, those still moments especially. Yeah.
I hope that if I ever have a nervous breakdown where I'm popping prescriptions uppers into an early grave, I have the flair to, like, listen to Vivaldi and say Showtime every morning.
I love the Showtime. I love I would love to see all the Showtimes cut together. So it's just one after another after another. Because you can just see
the progression. Yes.
It's so good.
A thing that these two characters have broadly in common, but very different in the details, authority. The cast of NYLA is so desperate to please Joe because he's so impossible to please. And he takes advantage of that to push them, and he gets brilliant work out of them, but who is destroying who?
Yeah.
Is you know, hanging over all of this movie. Whereas in Sequest, it is a much simpler, much more optimistic. The crew respects Bridger so goddamn much because he's so goddamn principled.
Yeah. It is interesting, like, seeing the, like, things that are similar between them and the performances when you're dealing with such very different characters, right? Like, Bridger is so controlled, and Gideon has this manic energy that's just, you can see his world spiraling around him.
Like, the Venn diagram between Bridger and Chief Brody is, like, it's there. You can see it. It's so slim. It's practically invisible between Joe Gideon and Captain Bridger. For my perspective, at least, it's just the sense of humor. That's the only thing they share as people.
I do love, like, thinking, though, of, like, part of me's like, this was Bridger when he was young, before he married.
Yeah.
Glitter shirt. Popping his pills.
This is a musical of sorts. The final act becomes a musical in this big unfolding way. And you see that Roy Scheider has such a gentle singing voice.
Yeah.
He's such a gentle singer in this big bombastic number. You have Ben Vereen just singing the hell out of this song alongside him. And his voice is just soft and tender.
Yeah.
Which is, like, huh, all right, that works.
I love it, though. Mm-hmm. Like, it's such, like, again, you're playing with these, like, opposites. Mm-hmm. And there's something that is so, it just pulls you in.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You can't look away from it. And it's so, like, it's not what you expect it to be. And it works so well. I do have to point out what I said when we rewatched it about how I just want them to take the final, like, this final musical number that he's in.
That is occurring at or immediately after death.
Yeah, and he's singing about how he's gonna die, and it's definitely, like, you know, very, like, and dream sequencing.
Confronting all of the people in his life, like, yeah. Every character in the movie has some cameo in the crowd of this musical number.
I just want them to take it and absolutely redo it for the ending of a production of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Costumes, set, all of it. Just do it exactly as it is.
Bring Ben Vereen back somehow. He was the first to perform Judas in the concept album that predated the show and the movie.
It would be so good. You have, you know how you have, like, the like, little the chorus of, like, the
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, like those, yeah.
The ladies.
Yeah, and they're often in, like, kind of, like, gospel-ish.
Yes. In the 70s choir. Film, that is how, yeah. They're, yes.
You give them, though, the leotards with the veins.
Yeah, the cardiac leotards.
Yes, you give them the cardiac leotards. It would be so good. It would be so good. And I also was thinking about how you could use, like, the choreography from the flying, like, the one that he's choreographing that just turns into, like, they're stripping and, like, yes, are they having, yes, simulated sex on stage? What is happening here?
Yes.
There are people who have never heard of this movie right now that are like, what the fuck?
I love that scene for how there's a clear split between, like, the money people investing in this show are like, we're dead. We're doomed. We're selling no tickets. And all the artists in the room are like, God damn it, he did it again. This is the best thing I've ever seen. Fuck, fuck, fuck. Another note I had, not necessarily or even at all about Roy Scheider in the film, but about the as properties themselves, as a film and a television show as a whole. Like, all that jazz is so very self-reflexive and so self-critical,
mm-hmm,
while Sequest is so straightforward,
mm-hmm,
and direct. Like, I'm thinking of scenes like when they watch the bad review on the TV critic is giving the stand-up. Everything she says about the movie that Gideon's making applies directly to all that jazz.
Yeah.
About all the excessive flash and just showing off the brilliance of the director, but the best moments are when he gets out of the way and lets the actors act. Like, that could be a review of the movie that it's in. Or in the death number that keeps going and going, the heart surgeon character's cameo in the final song is just him, like, sitting in his seats checking his watch.
Yeah.
That's so funny. It's so good. Antithetical to Sequest. This is a show that is earnest with its heart on its sleeve. Again, direct.
Mm-hmm.
There's one way to feel, and we're going to tell you how to feel, and it's usually going to be Nathan, you know, getting down on one knee and telling Lucas,
yeah,
the way the world really works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love all that jazz. If you haven't seen it, please go watch it.
Go watch it.
The best damn movie in existence.
It's a Criterion collection. Hell yeah, all that jazz.
I love it so much. That's all I can say.
And then watch Sweet Charity.
You can watch other things, yeah.
You can watch the Lenny Bruce movie. I think it's just called Lenny, or maybe it's called Bruce. It's one of those. Anyhow, is there anything else you wanted to bring up here in the Movie Star Minute?
Just go watch it.
Just go watch it.
Just go watch it.
Just go watch it.
It's so good. I just love it so much.
Anyhow, that is it for everything we have planned today on Whiskers. Mm-hmm. We share knowledge regarding Sequest.
Yeah. So, you know what you should do?
What should they do?
You should leave us a rating or review wherever you listen to us. That's a nice thing to do. We appreciate it. It makes us feel good.
You could be just like Rode O, who says, big fan of Grant and Elena's previous podcast, Sex Archie, so I'm excited to join them in another show that I assume, like high school football, has epic highs and lows. P.S. #Krieg Gang.
Yes!
The Krieg gang is well served by Act One of the Regulator.
Yeah.
Krieg kind of takes a back seat in the big, like, switch in this two-part episode scrunched down to only 42 minutes.
But you get him.
But you get him. He's in there. Yeah. So, yes, thank you for yet another 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. I do appreciate them. I love them so much.
You can also go tell your friend. You can tell your friend to come listen to Whiskers. You can tell them to go watch All That Jazz. Both are okay.
Yeah, I'm happy with either, frankly.
You could do both at the same time. That would be the preferred method.
This episode does not work as a commentary track for All That Jazz. It will not line up.
Well,
but
no.
What if it did, though?
Oh, what if it did?
It's a little too short, I'll say.
But yeah, you should do that. Those are nice things to do. Help spread the word. Help more people find us.
Maybe we claim hashtag Krieg Gang.
Krieg Gang.
Krieg Gang.
Are you guys all the Krieg Gang?
Maybe Rodeo has shown us the way. Oh.
Should they be something, though, with the bananas?
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 Well, Krieg is forever. Bananas are just for
Krieg
this episode.
Krieg is forever. Krieg Gang.
Krieg Gang.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Yeah, so you should do those things. You should also, I don't know, you can go check out our other stuff too. You can be like that person and, you know, be a fan of Sex Archie. History Honeys, which they don't make anymore. Or you could go listen to Throwback Bound, which I do.
When is Throwback Bound coming back?
We should be back this week. There should be a new episode.
So like today?
Yeah.
All right.
We drop on the same day that this drops. So yes, today, now, you can go listen.
And again, Bizarre Podcast Space Puppets is on a brief hiatus, returning on the 26th. That is the last Tuesday of the month.
But you can go listen to the episode I was on.
But there's 38 previous episodes already out, three of them featuring the wonderful Elena here. So yeah, there's plenty to check up on between now and when we launch season 4 at the end of the month.
I think that's it.
I think you're right. So thank you all for listening.
I'm Elena.
I'm Grant. And in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future. Showtime!
Showtime!
Bananas? Bananas?